Okay, Daf Yud. We said we'd take a look at this Mishnah, so let's take a look. Let's start fresh here. Kol get sheyesh alav eid kuti pasul chutz megitin oshem shechurei avadim. Any get that has an eid kuti, get over here meaning shtar, any shtar that has an eid kuti on it is pasul, except for gitin oshem shechurei avadim. And then the Gemara tells us, so this is one of the things that we had in that braisa, that gitin oshem shechurei avadim have in common. What do they have in common? That an eid kuti apparently is kosher on gitin oshem shechurei avadim. Says the Mishnah, maisa shevi lefer of Gamliel in fact, there was a get that was brought, a getisha, a classic get that was brought in front of Rabbi Gamliel that had a day kutim on it, and Rabbi Gamliel said that it's kosher. So this is machlokas in the Gemara, machlokas Abaye and Rava. Does Rabbi Gamliel disagree with the Tanakama? Tanakama says you could have one aid kuti. Rabbi Gamliel says you could have a day kutim. So this is machlokas Abaye and Rava, whether we have to change Rabbi Gamliel's words a little bit and say a do eid kuti and not a dov a day kutim, or you can leave it as is. And Rav Gamliel is arguing on the Tanakama whether one eid or two eidim is still going to be kosher when it comes to an eid kuti. Now says the Gemara, Mani Masnisin. So the Gemara says, well, in general, in terms of kutim, there are three basic approaches in Tanaim in terms of how we view a kuti's general adherence to mitzvahs, how we generally view how careful a kuti is about mitzvahs. Now, a little bit of background information is important over here. There is a sugya in Kiddushin Daf Ayin Hey that talks about who kuti is. Apparently, kutim were goyim that Sancheiriv brought, Sancheiriv Melech Ashur brought from Kuta, and he settled them in the Shomron, and they ostensibly, on the outside at least, were megayir to Judaism. But the pasuk says in Malachim Beis, "Vayhi b'tchila shiftam sham lo yaru es Hashem, vayishalach Hashem b'hem es ha'arayos, vayuhorgim b'hem." That they weren't fearing Hashem, they weren't acting as Jews are supposed to act, and therefore lions were sent and started to kill them. And because of that pachad of lions being sent to kill them, they were megayim. The question is, is that gerus a valid gerus? Was that gerus a real gerus or not? That is a machlokas tanoim in Maseches Kiddushin Daf Ayin Hey. Rabbi Akiva holds kutim gerei emes hey, that they are in fact gerei emes. It is a legitimate gerus, and therefore, even though it happened as a result of fear of the lions, it is a legitimate gerus. They're considered Jews. Rabbi Shmuel holds gerei arayos, that the kutim were megayir only because of the lions, and therefore it's not a legitimate gerus. They are not Jews. Whenever you come across a sugya that deals with the kuti, you need to figure out, are we undecided about that shayla, or is our Gemara assuming one way or the other, gerei emes or gerei arayos? Our discussion in the Gemara, is a kuti going to be a good aid? Can a kuti be trusted as an aid on a get? Where the Gemara is going to say, the whole premise of the discussion is going to be, well, it depends if he can be trusted. Well, what do you mean? If he's a guy, why should it depend if he can be trusted? A guy shouldn't depend if he can be trusted. A guy is a pasala aid, no? So the fact that we're going to even discuss whether he can be trusted, can't be trusted, is a clear indication that our Gemara is assuming, like Rabbi Akiva, gerei emes, that a kuti has to be gerei emes. Now, against that backdrop, the Gemara says, okay, now that we're dealing with these Jews, gerei emes, we're dealing with people who technically are Jews, what do we assume about a kuti? Yeah?
Side question that I had about the kuti in general, that after they converted, didn't the lions stop eating them?
Right.
So wouldn't you say, like, if they were not gerei emes, why would the lions stop eating them?
Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that? I don't know. Who knows the ways of Hashem? I don't know.
It's, no, I just feel like that's a riot. I say it there.
That it must be that they're gerei emes, right? Otherwise, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. So the Gemara says, okay, so there are three basic approaches that Tanaim have to how careful kutim are about mitzvos, and none of the three fit our Mishnah. And the context of the three shitos in Tanaim is a braisa about matzah. It could have been about anything, technically, but it's a braisa about matzah, meaning just to illustrate their the level of their diligence when it comes to mitzvos. Tanakama holds matzas kuti muteres va'adam yosef b'yidei chavas b'pesach. Those are two separate halachas. Muteres and adam yosef b'yidei chavas b'pesach. Muteres means that it's not chametz. Adam Yasi Bar Yidei Chavas and Pesach means that you could even use it for your mitzvah of matzah on the night of the Seder. What's enough community between not being chametz and versus using it for your mitzvah of matzah?
It could be not chametz, but it could be not kosher as a matzah.
Why not?
It could be considered something else.
What's it lacking? If it's not chametz, what would it be lacking?
Shmira.
Right? In order to be yotzi yuchiv on Pesach, it needs shmira also. Yeah. To have matzah that's not chametz is not enough. You also need shmira. Good? So two things. A kuti's matzah. If you get matzah from a kuti, it's mutter. And don't worry, it's shmura also. So basically, Kuti is very careful. Rabbi Lazar Oser Lefishein Bekin B'Tuktuke Mitzvahs. Rabbi Lazar says, no. Not only is it not Shmura, it's not Matzah. It's Chametz. You have to assume it's Chametz, because Kutim are not careful about Mitzvahs at all. Rabbi Shem Gamliel Omer, Kol Mitzvah Shechziku Ba Kutim Harbi Medakim Ba Yosem Yisrael. That really depends. You take it on a mitzvah by mitzvah basis. Some mitzvahs kutim are very, very careful about, and those mitzvahs that they're careful about, they're more careful than your average Jew, your average Orthodox Jew is careful about. Those mitzvahs that they're not careful about, they're obviously not careful about. So who does our Mishnah fit with? Itanakama. If our Mishnah is going like the Tanakama, that they're totally good, then afilu shar shtoras nami. Then why can't a kuti sign on a regular shtar? Our Mishnah said a kuti could sign on a get, but not a regular shtar. Well, why not? Why can't he sign a regular shtar if they're totally good? Rabbi Lazar, I feel getishan amilav. If you're assuming like Rabbi Lazar that a kuti is totally bad, that a kuti doesn't observe anything, well, then why is he allowed to sign on a get? And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and if you're going to assume like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that it just depends on, you know, his personal level of diligence, so what's their attitude about shtaros? If their attitude about shtaros is a positive attitude and they're diligent about that, let him sign on shtaros. And if not, don't let him sign on shtaros. Why? Where would you get this din that there's a difference between one type of shtar and a get isha, another type of shtar? How could you be mechalik? Maybe you're going to say, oh, maybe they are careful about gittin, but they're not careful about other shtaros. Well, then why do you only let one kuti sign on a get? You should let two kutim sign on a get, the Gemara says. So Gemara says, no. Well, we have to say Liolam Rebbe Lazar. At the bottom of the page says Liolam Rebbe Lazar. Really, we're assuming like Rebbe Lazar. Essentially, Kutim, again, the whole sugi assumes Gerei Ames, but they're not Bekiyin B'Tuktukei Mitzvos, they're not careful about Mitzvos. Bekiyin is interesting, it's an interesting terminology. We don't say that they're not Nizharin B'Tuktukei Mitzvos, they're not Bekiyin B'Tuktukei Mitzvos. Is there any difference between the two? So there's a halacha by Eidus in general, that a Rasha is pasul le'edus. Anyone who has din of a Rasha is pasul le'edus. What makes someone a Rasha? So someone who violates averos for which you're chayiv malchus is pasul le'edus. So if they're just not in his harn b'tuktukei mitzvos and they violate averos, well then I don't care that they're careful about gittin and shtaros, they shouldn't be allowed to sign anyway. Not because they're a kuti, but because they're a Rasha. So it could be that ein bekin b'tuktukei mitzvos is meduyak, the terminology is meduyak, that they are like a tinuk shenishba. They don't know anything. They just know that whatever mitzvos they do, they're very careful about it. But there are a lot of things that they have. They just think that they know what they know, and whatever they don't know, but that doesn't make them rishayim in any way. So really, we assume like Rabbi Lazar that they're not careful about anything. And the case is that a Yisrael is also signed on the shtar, and the fact that a Yisrael is also signed on the shtar is a raya that the kuti must be a good guy, that this kuti must be a kuti chaver, because otherwise the regular Yisrael never would have signed on the shtar. Tosos asked the obvious kasha on the base, wait a second, the only way you know that the kuti is a good guy is because the other guy signed on the shtar, so all of the ne'amonos of this shtar is riding on the shoulders of one person. And normally for Eidos to be good, you need two people who are equally reliable. But we only know the Yisrael who signed on the shtar is being made as an aid. Plus, he's giving the whole ne'amonos to the kuti. Because it's only because he signed that we trust the kuti in the first place. Okay, that's a kasha. Tosfos asked that kasha. He says, okay, maybe over here, since midaraisa, the Gerei Emes anyway, midaraisa, you could trust them, we take certain leniencies over here. It's a very, very strong kasha that Tosfos asks. And there's more to say at the end of this Gemara. I'll just say outside quickly how the Gemara concludes, and hopefully we'll come back. There's a very fascinating Yerushalmi that the Ramban quotes, and it's unclear where the Rambam falls on this Machlokes Bavli Yerushalmi. Let me just say over this Gemara, and hopefully we'll come back to it. Not tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have a Chanukah Shir with Rabbi Selinger, but Sunday, I guess, where the Gemara just says that if it's true that the Jew who signed would not sign with a kuti, then why by sharshtaros is it would not sign with a kuti who's not trustworthy? Then why by sharshtaros is it not okay? By sharshtaros you should also allow one kuti, one regular Jew, and you could trust the kuti because the Jew signed on it. So the Gemara says no, because by sharshtaros you don't need the two people to sign together. You could have one person sign and then bring the shtar to somebody else and have them sign. But when it comes to a get isha, you need both people to sign next to each other. They both need to be in front of each other. All the yidim are going to sign and need to be in the room at the same time. And therefore, when it comes to shar shtaros, the Jew may sign it, leave some space above his signature, and the kuti will go and sign it later. And the Jew has no idea, the regular Jew has no idea that a kuti is the second aid. So you can't trust that regular Jew to give nemanus to the kuti. But when it comes to get, since everybody's got to be in the room at the same time, the regular Yisrael sees the kuti. He knows who's signing it with him, right? He knows that the kuti is right there. So if he's willing to sign it, even though kuti is right there signing it with him, then you have every right to assume that the kuti is a kuti chaver. That's how the Gemara concludes. What's not 100% clear in the Gemara, and this is where the Yerushalmi is going to come in, is what if you have a get that the Jew signs on top and the kuti signs on the bottom? See, the way the Gemara played out is, the Gemara said, oh, the case is, the Jew signed on the bottom, and that's how you know that he's being made about the kuti also, because he saw the kuti's signature there. The Gemara says, no, that's not a good enough sign, that's not a good enough raya, maybe he signed on the bottom and left some space there for the kuti to sign above him. So the Gemara had to come onto this thing that, no, they're all in the room at the same time, that they have to be in the room at the same time. Once we say they have to be in the room at the same time, do we also need the Jew to be the bottom signature? Can the Jew be the top signature? They have to be in the room at the same time anyway. So it shouldn't matter. So that's a question we have to see, to look carefully at the Rishonim and see if they think it matters or not. It would seem that it shouldn't matter. But anyway, that's the end of the Gemara. That's the basic Shakla Vitari over here, the basic Sugya. So what did we say along? You had a question?
You say before we were talking about the Nizhar Nikin, just because you're not Nizhar doesn't mean you're not lucky.
Right, and just because you're not a Bucky doesn't mean you're not Nizhar. I mean, you may not be a Bucky, but you're Nizhar in whatever you do know. Not being Nizhar is reflects poorly on your level of piety. Not being a Bucky reflects poorly on your level of knowledge. Right? So a person could be a very pious person who knows very, very little, but ein amar it's chassid, and therefore he's going to end up not doing any of the mitzvahs, but he's not a Rasha. And amar is not always a Rasha, he's just not a chassid. That's what the Gemara in today's daf actually just said, that if you see a Talmud Chacham, even if he's no kim v'noter kinachash, you should stay close to him. But in Am Haaretz, even if he's a chassid, you should stay far away from him. You shouldn't live in the same area as Am Haaretz, even if he's a chassid. So why not? Because there's no such thing as Am Haaretz who's a chassid. If an Amaritz thinks that he's a chassid, he's very likely, and this is a very important Musar point, if someone is trying to do chassidus, but they have no basic knowledge of what's actually required of them, it is extremely likely that in their attempts to do chassidus, they're actually going to be violating Yisurim. That the way religious behavior has to happen is you have to start with the basics, and you have to build up, and there has to be a knowledge base of what's required of you and what's not required of you. On the other half of the statement, that a Talmud Chacham is not nokim v'noter kinachash, Maritz Chayes has a beautiful ha'ara over there. I just said in the Daf Yomi Shir this morning, Maritz Chayes points out, why kinachash? Why do you want a Talmud Chacham to be like a nachash? So there's a Gemara in two places in Shas, in Tainis, I think in Sota, where the Gemara says about the nachash, that you say to the nachash, why do you bite people? You get no hana from it. Your lechem is the afar ha'aretz, is the dirt on the ground. You're not getting hana from biting anybody. When you're nokim v'noter, you're doing it for no reason whatsoever, for no personal gain, for no personal benefit. So that says in Meretz Chayes, when you have a Talmud Chacham that puts up a Milchama, when he makes a big deal about something, he's only a true Talmud Chacham if he's Kenachash. If he's doing it because he wants no personal benefit from it, he's not doing it for his own personal gain to put himself in a better position. He's doing it like a Nachash, whereas it's completely selfless in that sense. Okay, that's just a side hara. But anyway, what I wanted to focus on is this din of matzas kuti. That we said matzas kuti, according to the Tanakama of the Brisa, matzah of a kuti, two alachas. Number one, that it's not chametz. Number two, that it is shmura matzah. It can count as shmura matzah. So Tosfos has two kashas. There are two parts to this Tosfos. The second part has a lot more... There are a lot more points to be made in the second part in terms of issues that come up, but let's do one at a time. First part of Tosfos just raises the question: Vim Tomar Halo Gazrel Piton Kedarmin Pirkei Rabbi Elazar. That just like there's an issue called Pasakum, there's an issue called Paskuti, a little bit of a less known issue, but they did make a gzera. Pirkei Rabbi Elazar says they made a gzera against Paskuti. The reason that they were gozer against bread made by a kuti is because the kutim were mevatel, the binyan beis hamikdash. They weren't doing the mitzvah of binyan beis hamikdash during the days of Ezra. So they got so serious about Paskuti, they said if you eat Paskuti, it's like eating chazit. Pretty serious. And we even say about a min, that a min's pas is like paskuti. So how can you say that you're allowed to eat matzah v'kuti? Matzah is pas, it's bread, and all paskuti is going to be aser. So it says, Tosfos, some Rabbeinu Tam, demari bi'isa sol shasakuti matzah mimena. Now we're dealing with a case where a Jew made the dough, and the kuti just baked it. So it's matzah's kuti, right? But it's not pas kuti. Because what makes it matzah's kuti is the fact that the kuti baked it, but it's not pas kuti because the Jew made the dough. Which is a chiddush in the definition of pas kuti. Right? One might have thought that pas kuti is not dependent on making the dough. Pas kuti is dependent on the makah bepatish of bread making, of finishing the job, of baking it. But apparently, even though which is different than, let's say, what would be the halacha? Bishul akum. Let's take a parallel this here. Bishul akum. I put up a chalent. I put all the ingredients in the chalent, and I leave it in my fridge, and the housekeeper comes and takes it and puts it in the crock pot, turns on the crock pot. I spiced it, I put all the meat in the potatoes, I peeled all the potatoes, I did all the preparatory work, I did everything. I put it all in there. And then she just puts it on the fire. Is that a problem of Bishul Akum? So yeah, absolutely it's a problem of Bishul Akum. She's doing all the cooking. Right? We don't look at the preparatory work and say, well, whoever does that, that's going to define this Meichel, whether it's a Meichel of a Jew or a guy. Right? That's definitely a problem of Bishul Akum. So Ashkenazim are making we allow ourselves to turn on. What? Sephardim actually make you participate in the actual bishul process more than just by turning on a fire. You have to actually do the bishul. You have to actually take the food and put it on the fire. A Jew has to actually do that in order for it to be called not bishul Yisrael. In order for it to be bishul Yisrael. But apparently, to avoid paskuti. All you need is that a Jew prepares the dough. So that itself seems to be quite a chiddush. Why? Why is preparing the dough considered a significant enough act that takes away the status of paskuti? What would we say by pasakum? Let's say a Jew prepares the dough and a guy bakes the dough. Is that called pasakum?
So
it would seem that if a guy bakes the dough, it would say, according to
it
what?
Like, well,
if you, it depends like what you compare it to. If you compare it to bishul akum,
I'm saying it seems like there's a separate din in dough.
So maybe that's the chiluk. The chiluk is dough. That dough making is considered such a critical part. I mean, when it comes to cooking foods, it could be any number of ingredients, any number of ways to put it together. So the way you put it together is not going to be a determinant. But dough, the critical, when you make bread, there's always a lisha. That's a critical step of the process. By bishul, putting food on the fire is bishul. You could put it with this many ingredients, that many ingredients, this many spices. It doesn't make it, it's all bishul. But afia only making bread only happens with a lisha, right? And therefore, the lisha is going to determine whether it's pas kuti or whether it's pas yisrael, kneading, with the kneading of the dough. So that's going to be the determinant of how to label it. So then it should turn out that by pas akum we should say the same thing. Right, that if a Jew makes the dough and a guy puts it in the oven, I don't know. I don't remember. I wanted to look up my shirim on Pas Akum, but I didn't have it on my computer, and the internet's down here. So I, yeah.
Maybe you could say that kutim are a higher level then. Like, maybe that you could believe them a little more, trust them a little more.
Oh, okay. So this leads to another very important issue: are we more makel with pas kuti than we are with pas akum? I mean, you want to say, well, we have to be, right? Because kutim are we're assuming Geri Emes. So if we assume Geri Emes, we're assuming that these are Jews at least. Why is Pasakum Asu? Why would they make a gzeir against Pasakum? Why are they making a gzeir against Bishalakum? So these are sugis and mesechs of Odazara, right? And we showed him, discussed it there, that it's Mishum Chasnus, let's say. That we're afraid that, you know, they're going to cook you delicious food and then you're going to come to marry their daughters. Some Rishonim say that you're afraid that they're going to put non-kosher stuff into your food. Okay, let's assume that you know that there's nothing treif in there, everything is kosher. Mishamcha, it's korva, you're going to come too close to them, you don't want to develop such a close relationship. That's where Pasakum, that's where Bishlakum comes from. Right? Let's assume that. Why is Paskuti a problem? It's not an Israel of Chasen, they're Jews, right? They're Geri Emes. What? You can't marry their kids. What? I mean, saying you can't. It doesn't make sense. Mishum, at least midar raisa, you certainly can, right? So there shouldn't be a gezeira mishum chasnus. But Tosas told us why. Why is paskuti aser? We wanted to make life difficult for them, because they failed when we needed them to build the Beis HaMikdash. They failed. So this is a knas. It's a knas on the kuti to make life difficult for them. When you're dealing with a different reason for the gezeira, it could very well be that the rules are going to be different. That when it comes to, let's say, Bishul Akum, we're worried about the most significant contribution that's going to bring about this kurva, that's going to bring about this closeness. Maybe when it comes to Paskuti, it's just about whatever's going to make their life more difficult, whatever's going to make their life more challenging. So we're not going to let them make bread, but we'll be allowed to make bread and have them just finish it off. You have to figure out why that would be more challenging. So one second, but let's again. Reuven pointed out it makes sense that Pas Akum should be a bigger iser, should be a more severe iser. But the reason I'm pointing out there are different reasons is if they were there for the same reason, then you're right. A guy is worse than a kuti. Kuti is Geri Emes. A guy is not Geri Emes. So it makes sense. We're going to be more machmer for the guy than we'll be for a kuti, right? But if they're not for the same reason, so then maybe you can't necessarily assume that if something is mutter in Pas Akum, let's say you have a heter in Pas Akum somewhere, that you have to be matir in Pas Kuti. No, maybe we just want to make the kuti's life miserable and we're going to be machmer in Pas Kuti. So some Sofer points this out, actually. There is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Pas Akum Sugyas. Whereas there's a kula for Pas Akum, let's say you're out in the Sadeh, and there's nowhere you can find Jewish bread. Within four meal, there's no Jewish bread available to you. So the Gemara says, in that situation, you're allowed to have Pas Akum. We're Mekel and Pas Akum. What about Pas Kuti? Would it be Mekel and Pas Kuti if there's no, within four meal, there's no Jewish bread available to you? So Chassam Sofer says, it's clear from this Tosos that we would not be Mekel and Pas Kuti in that case. How do you see that? Because Taisus had a kasha. How could we say that you're having matzah of a kuti? It's a violation of pas kuti. But if there's this big heter out there, that as long as you're four meal away from any Jewish bread, you're allowed to have pas kuti, then why didn't Taisus just say, you're four meal away from Jewish bread, and that's why you're allowed to have it? Meaning, instead of Tos saying, no, you know what we mean when we say matzah kuti? We mean that the Jew prepared the dough and the guy just baked it. What kind of a kimta is that? It says matzah kuti. It would have been such a simpler answer to just say we're dealing with a case that it's more than four meal away, you're not going to be able to get to it, and that's why pas kuti is mutter, right? Would have been the better way to say it. The fact that he doesn't say that is a raya that pas kuti doesn't have this kula. So why does Pas Kuti not have this kula? If it's mutter for Pas Akum, that's more serious than it should be mutter for Pas Kuti. So one possible svara is what we're just referring to now, that maybe it's not about which is more severe. You can only measure akum versus kuti if the reason for the gzera was the same. But the reason for the gzera is not the same. Pas kuti was about a specific knas because they didn't help in the binyan abayis. Pas akum was because we're afraid of mingling. So you just can't compare the two. So there may be kulas where we think by pas akum, where we're not worried about mingling, but we are still want to be, meaning, let's put it this way. This is a much better way to put it, I think. When I'm not allowed to have your bread, let's say, is that a din in me, or is it a din in you? It depends. If we're dealing with pas akum, what's the reason for pas akum? Or bishul akum, let's say. So I shouldn't mingle with goyim, right? So I'm not allowed to have the goy's bread. Is that a din in the goy, or is that a din in me? It's a din in me. That I shouldn't spiral out of control, end up mingling with the goyim, and fall into their world, right? Paskuti. One second. Paskuti. Why am I not allowed to have his bread? The Chazal weren't trying to punish me. I didn't do anything wrong. They're trying to punish him. It's a din in the kuti. It's not a din in the Yisrael. So maybe you're going to have a kula in pas akum because we're willing to be mekel when I'm in a difficult situation. The whole gezera was a gezera in me. Chazal weren't gozer on me b'shas adchak because it's my dchak. So Chazal weren't gozer on me. But by pas kuti, the gezera wasn't on me. Who's the gezera on? It was on him. So my dchak, my difficult circumstance shouldn't affect the gzeirah on him. The gzeirah on him should still be in place because his circumstance didn't change, my circumstance changed. So that's one approach as to why pas kuti might not have the kula of dalad meal that pas akum has. You don't like it.
I feel like that's backwards logic. Being a time that's a shas adchak for me, I still have to be punished. But at a time that's a shas adchak for him,
No.
It's right. The way around. I'm saying I feel like that should be the opposite. Meaning, if it's gzera on me, I should be also no matter what. But if it's gzera on him, so that gives you room to be mako. Because if I'm in need, then why should I be affected by gzera on him?
Well, that's just the reality sometimes, that there's a din that has residual, you know, this collateral damage. But they're not going to uproot the gzera on him if I'm in need. What does that have to do with the gzera on him?
Why would you be able to uproot a gzera on me when I'm...
Because very often Chazal only goes there when it's not Shas Adchak. B'Shas Adchak lo gozer b'Rabbanan. You have that concept in Shas. And in Shas Adchak, the Rabbanan wouldn't be gozer. Yeah, when it's my Shas Adchak, they're not going to be gozer at me. Someone else's Shas Adchak, they're good.
I just feel like they should.
I hear you, Sparrow, but I don't know. I like it. I think. Anyway, so that's one approach. Another possible approach is that maybe you can compare kuti to akum, and that akum is much, much worse. And therefore, l'chora, whatever kula you're going to have by akum, you should have to have by kuti also, because if we're mekel by an akum, kal v'chom, we're mekel by a kuti. But, sometimes we have a concept in Shas, that chacham asu chizik l'devreim yoser mishal Torah. What does that mean, asu chizik l'devreim yoser mishal Torah? That sometimes the Rabbanan treated dinim d'Rabbanan more seriously than they treated dinim d'Oraisa. That they were more strict about dinim d'rabbanan than they were about dinim d'oraisa. Why? Why would they do that? Don't they know they're not as powerful as God?
Yeah, but they're zeros.
So why would they say that it's more severe, that it's more serious?
Dinim d'rabbanan is usually going to be more machmir than dinim d'oraisa.
Why? 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 Why would you?
It's like trying to protect us from something.
Oh, in general, a Darabanan is always something new that's beyond the Daraisa. But why, like, would I have to, let's say, by Ner Chanukah, even though there's a bad example because there are separate reasons for this, why is it that for a mitzvah Daraisa, I only have to spend 20% of my money? For Ner Chanukah, I have to sell the shirt off my back. But why did the Darabanan make the rules governing the Dinim Darabanan more strict sometimes, not always, We know Savik Daraisa L'chum and Savik Darabanan L'kula. You know, sometimes we're more strict on Daraisa than we are on Darabanan. But sometimes the rules governing a Darabanan will be more strict than the rules governing a Daraisa. What's the thinking behind that?
We're taking them seriously.
Good. So we take them seriously. They know we're going to take God seriously. They're not so sure we're going to take them seriously. So in order to take them more seriously, they show that we mean business. So it's very severe. Maybe you have a similar svara by the relationship between Akum and Kuti. Pas Akum, there may be certain kulas. Because at the end of the day, it's a guy. You know, you have to fall pretty far to want to marry a guy. But by a Kuti, maybe we're not going to take it so seriously. Okay, they did this Avera so long ago. How long are we going to punish them for it? And you may not take it so seriously. And therefore, maybe kulas that you can have by Pas Akum, which inherently you're going to take the issue seriously anyway, we're not going to have by Pas Kuti. Because by Pas Kuti, we need to reinforce it a little bit in order that people should take it seriously. Of course, there's a third possibility over here, and that is that the diuk of the Chassam Sofer is not a diuk at all. Chassam Sofer's whole diuk, that there's no heter of dalin mil by Pas Kuti, is from what? From the fact that, not from anything Tosos said, it's from what Tosos didn't say. Those are always dangerous diukim. Why didn't he give my answer instead of giving his answer? Well, maybe he liked his answer better. Meaning it's very hard to say the fact that he didn't give this teretz is a raya that this teretz doesn't exist in his world. Maybe he thought it was a more difficult ukimta to say that there's no Jewish bread within Dalin Mil, that's the whole case of Matzah Kuti, than to say that it just happens to be that the Kuti baked the matzah that you had prepared. It could have been that simple. So, okay, there's, of the three approaches, we have one that's pure lamdas, you know, what's the ikra gezeira, it's a din on him versus a din on them, and we have one that's like half lamdas, half balabatish, you know, that, okay, din drabanan, sometimes in the yosef chizuk, yosef mishal Torah, then we have one that's pure balabatish. Right, that who says that just because Tosfos didn't say, right? Mori Rabbi Rabbi Simon likes to say that very often we make fun of the Balabatish Teretz. Usually it's the right one. Usually it's the one that's most correct. Very often when it's a Balabatish Teretz, it's because it's true. So that was one half of Tosfos in regards to Pas Kuti. Second half of Tosfos I thought was the more interesting half. Frek Tosfos, Vim Tomer, Amay Yotzei by Yidei Chova. How can you take matzah from a Kuti and trust, according to the Tanakhama, trust that you could be Yotzei, your mitzvah of matzah on the night of the Seder? Dilma lo shamra l'shei matzah. Maybe he didn't do Shmira. And you need Shmura matzah on the night of the Seder. After all, the chashidi alifneiver, kutim violate lifneiver. So he knows you want to use this for your matzah. He's going to say, yeah, it's shmura matzah, enjoy. How can you trust him? Granted, he's careful about shmura matzah for himself, because he's careful about mitzvah daraisa. But lifneiver they're chashran, because kutim took the Torah very literally. Lifneiver lo sitein michshal means don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. And they thought that it doesn't, they did not assume that it means don't cause someone, don't be machshel someone in an aveira, in an issue. Some of the Achronim point out that if you actually put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, it may not be lifnei, it might not be lifnei iver lo sitein michshel. Meaning, we have a concept, came in today's daf actually, ein mikra yotze midei pshuta. That pash pshat in mikra is always correct. So that's the question, the poskim debate. Would it be wrong to say that lifneiver lo sitein michshel is not violated when you put a stumbling block in front of a blind person? I mean, you definitely violated something when you put a stumbling block, right? You're at least a jerk, right? You're at least violated after Rech Kamocha. So it's definitely something. But is it a problem to suggest that it's a violation of, that it's not a violation of lifneiver lo sitein michshel to put a stumbling block in front of a blind person? After all, ein mikra yotzei midei pshuta. So you have to really figure out what the geder of ein mikra yotzei midei pshuta is. I mean, sometimes, just in the natural way of speaking, the pasha pshat of what you're saying is allegory, right? That, I don't know, think of any expression that you use. I was blown away. Really? Blown? Like, it's not, you know, like, what do they call those books? A million bedelia, right? That the way people speak it always involves a certain sense of allegory. So does Ein Mekiyos Amidei Pshuta mean that you literally, the words have to literally mean what they sound like they mean? So probably not. Probably means, right? So you're probably still within bounds to say Lifnei V'Lasita. There's a Machlokas Rambam in the Ravid in Yemos HaMashiach. The Rambam writes that Yemos HaMashiach also in today's Daf Yomi, the Gemara says Shmuel Shita Ein Bein Olam Azal Yemos HaMashiach El Shibur Malchios Pulvar. That the only thing that's going to change in Yemos HaMashiach should not be confused with Olam Haba. It's a different thing. Yemos HaMashiach, when Mashiach comes, we're still in this physical world. So the Rambam says, like Shmuel, that everything's going to be the same. You know, you still have to work for a living. There will be rich people, there will be poor people. There, you know, everything's going to run the same, except Klal Yisrael is going to live in Eretz Yisrael with a Jewish government, run al pi Torah, and we're not going to have to worry about foreign enemies trying to nuke us. Okay, great. Other than that, that is pretty great. But you know, other than that, everything else is going to run the same. What about all the psukim and neviim that talk about these supernatural phenomena, that these animals aren't going to attack people anymore and stuff like that? No, that just means animals over there means the our enemies. The people that they're not going to attack is us. That's what it means. It's all Shibun Malchios that it's talking about. It's not talking about any change of nature. Says the Ravid, V'halo b'toruksi v'ishpati chayera min haaretz. But it says in the Torah, v'ishpati chayera min haaretz, that I'm going to get rid of all evil creatures from this earth. So what are you going to do with that, Rambam? So everyone asks on the Ravid, were you not paying attention, Ravid? The Rambam just got through saying every pasuk that's about evil creatures attacking is not really about evil creatures. It's about our enemies. What kind of silly question? He'll do the same thing with that pasuk that he did with all the other pasukim. So Rav Reuven Margolios, in one of his Kontrasim, points out beautifully. He says the Ravid was very meduyuk in the way he said it. He didn't say v'halo ksiv, but it's written v'shpati chai rab min aretz. Every pasuk the Rambam quoted about Yemos HaMashiach was a pasuk in Navi, mostly Yeshayahu, right? It describes Yemos HaMashiach, and the Rambam says allegory. Is it when the Ravid asks his kasha, he says v'halo b'toru ksiv v'shpati chai rab min aretz. It's nice. You could explain away all of Navi as being allegory. All of Navi is just a mashal. It means this. It's a melitza. It's a Torah in mikriyos imidei pshuta. In the Torah, it's got to be pasha pshat. So what do you do v'alo b'toruk sivish padichay ramnaris? So what's Ram's teretz going to be? Now it's a good kasha. Now the Ravid's kasha is taka a good kasha. So pashtus says the Rambam would respond that in normal human, in normal language, the allegory is the pasha pshat sometimes. Vishpati chayra min ha'aretz, pasha pshat of vishpati chayra min ha'aretz is not about chayra, it's about the evil beings and creatures, the evil people that are going to be after us. And maybe similar by Livneiver. But anyway, back to our Tosfos. So what's the kasha? How can you take their matzah, their chashra and Livneiver, and therefore you should never be able to trust that it's shmura matzah? So the number one kasha all the Achronim ask on this Tosfos is that he should have asked a better kasha. He's going to ask a kasha, their chashra and Livneiver, how can you take their matzah? What's the last sentence of that kasha? Why? What's the problem? They're chashon lifneiver, so I shouldn't be able to take the matzah because. One second. So what does Tosfos say? Because it may not be shmura, right? What else might it be? Chametz. They might be giving you chametz. The Braisa had two dinim. The Braisa said kuti matzah's kuti muteres. Tosfos fixates on the second din, which frankly is the less important of the two. The fact that matzah kuti muteres, you could assume it's not chametz. Why? Why can you assume that?
Maybe they're not going to give you some
It's not nearly as bad as Chiv Karis. Correct. But Kutim think Lifnei Iver is not a problem. And we have no such chilek between severe averos that they're causing you to do? And that really is part of a broader question, really. Is there a difference if I cause you to do chil Shabbos, or if I cause you to wear shatnez, or if I cause you not to eat matzah? Is there a difference between those? And this is part of a broader chakira in Lifnei Iver. The number one chakira, if you ever heard a shir about Lifnei Iver, there's one question that everyone asks, and they give like 15 nafkaminas. The question about Lifnei Iver is, when I cause someone to do an avera, is it that I have a chelek in their avera? Or is it that I did a separate avera called Lifnei Iver? That it's not about their avera, but I get a separate thing called Lifnei Iver. So when I cause you to be Mechal Shabbos, am I a Mechal Shabbos? Can't be Mesarif to a minion? Or no, I violated Lifnei Iver, so I can still be Mesarif to a minion. I didn't violate Chol Shabbos, I violated Lifnei Iver. So it may make a difference over here. Meaning, is there even room for such a svara? Is there a difference between Lifnei Iver on Chiv Kares and Lifnei Iver on Bittul Asay? If you know that Lifnei Iver is a chilek in each aver that they do, then there may be room for a chilek. But it happens to be that Kutim don't hold Lifnei Iver at all, but at least there would be room in Svara for such a chilek. But if you hold Lifnei Iver as a separate Isra of Lifnei Iver, then what difference does it make? It's all the same Isra of Lifnei Iver. Lots of nafgaminas. Let's say you do Lifnei Iver on Gilei Arayos. So is it Yehar Gval Yavar to do Lifnei Iver on Gilei Arayos? So if it's a chilek in Gilei Arayos, then it's not Bezrai of Gilei Arayos. If it's separate Isra of Lifnei Iver, then it's separate Isra of Lifnei Iver. What about from Mitzvah Saseh? It's a big discussion in the Achronim. Is there Lifnei Iver on Nasei or only Lifnei Iver on Los Saseis? Let's say I cause you to eat in Sukkah that's not kosher. I tell you the Sukkah's fine. It's not. It was Tasav Lomanasoi, something, you know, something that's not discernible that you would not have been able to tell the difference. What? Okay, something like that, right. Or he has over here, I give you chutei tzitzis that were not made l'shma. So they're not kosher for the mitzvah of tzitzis. So machshul you in the mitzvah sasei. Would you become pasul le'edos midrabanan if you machshul someone in Isra say? I mean, certainly you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to cause someone to violate a mitzvah. But would that pasul le'edos? Or let's say someone says, I want you to be machshul someone in Isra d'rabanan. I mean, in the mitzvah sasei. Do you have to give up all your money to avoid being machshel someone in mitzvah saseh? One second. When do you have to give up all your money in halacha to avoid violating halacha? For lo saseh. If you're violating lav d'oraisa, right? So is it a violation of lifnei iver to stop someone from doing the mitzvah, to prevent someone from mitzvah saseh? If it is, then I don't have to give up all my money to not do that. But if it's not Lifnei Iver Midaraisa, then I wouldn't have to give up all my money. So there are those achronim, he quotes here from the Mitzvah HaMelech, brings a raya from our Tosos, and with this we'll close, that clearly a raya she'inala tshuva, that it applies to Mitzvah Say as well. Because what do we say? What does Tosos say? Tosus doesn't ask, I, Kutim, aren't careful about Lifnei Iver, and therefore it might be Chameitz. What does Tosus say? Kutim aren't careful about Lifnei Iver, and therefore it might not be Shmura Matzah. And he's saying, and he doesn't care about Lifnei Iver, so he doesn't mind giving you non-Shmura Matzah. What's he getting you to do, like you said before? All he's getting you to do is be Mevatel Mitzvah Saseh. And yet we're calling that Lifnei Iver. See, clearly Tosus assumes Lifnei Iver applies to Mitzvah Saseh. And that might be why Tosus didn't ask the better question. He had a chiddush on his mind. Right? Why didn't he ask the kasha? Why didn't he ask the kasha? Ah, he's being machshel you chameit. He could ask that kasha, but then you wouldn't see this great chiddush that Lifnei Iver applies even to a mitzvah saseh. So he asks a kasha that may not seem like as great a kasha, but actually adds in this extra chiddush.
Of course, Tosfos would say, I feel chameit.
Correct, correct. Right, that's what it would sound like at this point. Although there are other tirutzim that we'll have to get to. All right, is there going to be a mincha?